Good evening, guys. Welcome to another edition of Inside the NDL. I am your host, D. Kane, and of course, with me is my co-host, Penguin. And our guest tonight
What's
is
happening?
our guest tonight is Rain on You.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
So, Penguin, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. We're definitely in the throes of summer here. It was nice 90 degrees today, and the mosquitoes, fortunately, are borderline combusting when you smack them right here, right now.
Man, they probably would make that into a sport. I definitely would.
I need to get myself another one of those little, like, electrified tennis racket bug zapper things again. I used to have one. Just go outside and just, you know, just swing it around and slaughter about 100 of those little suckers. But it broke last year, so I need to go make that purchase this week for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely something you need to replace. And Rain, how about you, buddy? How are you doing today? Did we lose Rain? Mike might be having some technical difficulties. He's been finding himself.
I do not hear him. Yeah.
All right. Hey, guys. Sorry about that. it's crazy. So busy with sports and stuff. I'm in the middle of long range planning for work. So it's 10-hour days. Not a lot of downtime from work. We do got some time off here from sports for the kids. So trying to enjoy the next 6 weeks or so, and then we're back at it.
All right. Well, I mean, the summer is the festival season where there's a whole lot of things going on, and it sounds like you are going to definitely be a busy man. All right.
Yeah, definitely so.
So Rain, just go ahead and get started into things. You started out in season 2, and then there was a break until about season 15. What brought you to the NDL, and what was some of the reasons for the long break between season 2 and 15?
You know, that's pretty interesting. So I had to think about this one a little bit. You know, why, where did I go and why was it? And truthfully, I was big on the East Room lobby ball play when I first joined back in, 2004, season 2. I've been playing a little bit competitively in some other leagues and with some other groups. But I, after looking at kind of the timeline and thinking it over, I actually came to what the real answer was and what happened, right? So 2004 is the year that World of Warcraft launched. And I started playing that game as a complete joke. I was running a CompUSA location at the time. Didn't much care about computers, being a computer nerd, whatever. And I used to make fun of everybody in there because they'd always play EverQuest, right? That was the big game back then. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are a bunch of nerds. So they convinced me to join up with them and taking a little adventure into Azeroth. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to kick your butts. So I go and I start playing, and I get on there, and like, I can't use WASD to turn. I suck, like, looking with a mouse. I have no idea what's going on. It took me until I was like level 30 to realize I could eat and drink at the same time. And once that game started to click for me, I was done. Like, I started playing super competitive, and I lost like 3 good years of my life to that game. So that is actually what ended up causing the gap from season 2 to season 15.
Wow, I would not have actually guessed that in a million years, but that's pretty cool.
You were abducted by nerd culture, basically. That's,
man, so that was, I really was. And it wasn't even the nerd culture. Like, I didn't even care about the storyline, right? It was the way the game was, the constant carrot on the stick, and the depth that it had to, like, really detail out your abilities, your builds, your gear. And then when it came down to it, when you started doing PvP, and that was my favorite thing, even though I did get into big time raiding and stuff. The PvP was just like, it was so like clean and real, right? Like, if you lost, you lost because you screwed up. You didn't lose because EA decided to hit you with a random fumble or something. You know, there's RNG for crits and things like that. But man, it it really fed my need for competitive gaming.
I can see the appeal now, definitely. You're saying competitive atmosphere with no random EA-ness. Yeah, I'd probably get up sucked in as well, for sure.
Absolutely. Wow. And it was interesting, right? Because, you know, you could do a massive raid where it's you versus a major boss or an instance or something, right? And it takes exceptional precision to execute those with a group of 40 people in a voice channel, right? Like, that's crazy. And what I thought was interesting is I had a bunch of college guys that were working for me at the time. And I started noticing these really cool parallels to how guild leaders and officers worked and basically executed like a business. And what I was trying to teach these guys is they were, you know, college guys working for me, about how to make money, how to read a P&L, how to manage people, how to sell things. So many parallels about life in terms of the whole guild environment. It was just super interesting for me during that time.
Kind of a cool story, yeah. Okay, well, speaking of gaming stuff here, we'll just do the natural next question. We all know you as your tag of Rain on You. What a breakdown for us, the origin and reason and why of that.
This is probably another one that's going to throw you guys for a bit of a loop. And then this one actually has a lot of backstory to it as well. So I graduated high school in 97, was a D student, hated school, hated reading, all that stuff. Except for one author. Because I got through high school, I really enjoyed reading John Grisham. And it's like the only thing I read, but the book, The Rainmaker, right? And if you know the book, I'm not going to spoil it.
It's a good book.
It came out in 97. And now there's a series on USA that's coming here, or is out maybe right now. But the whole idea of what The Rainmaker is, right, is the one that blows up on the scene, that makes the big profit, that has the big income. And, you know, so it's kind of a bit of a flashy name. Well, that ironically combined with two of my favorite basketball players and my favorite basketball team during that same period, Seattle Sonics and Sean Kemp, the Rain Man.
So, oh, yes.
Yeah, so I threw it together, and for a couple years, I went under the moniker Rainmaker, but I spelled it R-E-G-I-N-M-A-K-E-R. And as I started bouncing around, I used a PSN name of EA Rain, EA Rainmaker. And I actually, you know, hopefully nobody remembers the group, but I had the VG tag on there as well. And VG was a fairly well-known group of NCAA football guys that were kind of assholes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eventually dropped that and tried to go back to a, you know, just a regular Rain tag, because I wanted to move away from the EA connection and VG and all that, and really couldn't find one. So I just started doodling around and came up with Rain on You from there.
Very cool. Yeah, I remember, definitely remember Sean Kemp there in that online. That's kind of a cool story. That was a fearsome force back in his day, for sure.
Definitely. One of those that you enjoyed watching, for sure. it's kind of weird that you bounced around with the names throughout EA. I mean, a lot of people don't remember. Like, my first name when I first came into the league was actually AKA King God. But I honestly thought that was such a douche name that I decided to change. I was like, why did I? Yeah, I just felt like a douche with that name, and I had to change it.
I think we've all got an old email or AIM persona back in the day that if we couldn't hand out today in a professional business sense, if we needed to send someone a resume or some information, that's for sure.
So look, I got to run with that, and I will completely out myself on this one, because my friends still kind of make fun of me for this. And so, you know, graduating in 97, I came out when you had the cars with the big rims, and you had the massive subwoofers and amps, and you had little banners on your car and all this stuff, right? And I was playing some semi-pro and arena ball, and, you know, everybody has these monikers. And at the time, you know, AOL was was just getting going, and they had moved from 8 character names, I think it was 8 character names, to 16 or something like that. And somehow I snagged primetime player. And complete douche move, it ended up plastered on my car. All of the guys on the football team knew it. Like, it was crazy. And I totally lived that lifestyle for like 2 or 3 years. And looking back, it's almost embarrassing, like, how bad it was, like a Eminem wannabe knockoff thing going on. But it was crazy. Good times back then.
Oh God. And I thought I was bad. I was on the Tupac era, because I graduated in 97 myself, so trust me, I know the era of which you speak. Well,
yeah, Frank, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, I lived it all out, man. White Trans Am, blacked out windows, got the, you know, 16s in the back, nonstop, everything, you name it.
The exact type of guy a father wants to see pull up to take his daughter out on a date.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can only imagine a prom ride. That had to be wild.
I was too cool for prom, bro.
Oh, wow. See, I was different. I went to like 5 different proms.
I did. I went to other proms, not mine.
All right, Mike, you are a sports fan with a mind for numbers and strategy. If you can step into the front office or sideline position, would you choose Notre Dame or the Cleveland Browns? And what role would you have?
I mean, there's no fixing the Browns, man. The Browns is the Browns. And honestly, for like my mentality, what I like to do for a living, what I spend my extracurricular time on, I'd have to be at Notre Dame and working somewhere within the framework of what Marcus has built over there. Love the opportunity to influence younger people, help guide them, give them direction, set them on a good path. And as far as the work, yeah, I mean, you know, I work with numbers for a living. I don't know that necessarily applies there, but I would venture to guess that somewhere on the recruiting side of things, there is an opportunity or a gap for colleges to do better than what they're doing in evaluating talent. Maybe not necessarily at the highest level, like a Notre Dame, but I think that a lot of kids fall through the cracks for one reason or another.
Yep. That's become a big business for sure, talent evaluation, especially with all that money flowing through college ball this day and age. The staff some of these teams have now are nuts. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe one day we see you in a role like that. But keeping on the Notre Dame path there, you know, I know you're kind of, they're kind of regionally in the area you are there, but there's a lot of good teams in that area there. What is the story behind Notre Dame and why are they your team?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say that Notre Dame has always been my one. And you see, from a basketball standpoint, growing up listening to the Bearcats on the radio as I go to bed at night, the Huggins era, you know, from Herb Jones or Ping and Martin, Nick Van Exel, those guys. And then third being Penn State. My grandfather played there many, many years ago for a short time, and I got a lot of family from Pennsylvania. But the reason it ended up as Notre Dame is it comes down to TV contracts, right? So Notre Dame had a contract with, I believe, NBC for many, many years growing up. So you just knew that at 12:30, 1 o'clock, 3, whenever, Notre Dame was going to be on the TV. And kind of being at an impressionable age in my early teens, I guess, maybe even closer to even 10 or 11, Notre Dame was a bit of a powerhouse, right? They had Tony Rice back then running the option. And of course, every kid at that age is, you know, looking for that player that you look up to. And so my first football number was number 42. And, you know, everybody would say, oh, you know, Ronnie Lott, number 42, was killing it back then. And he was smashing the Bengals. And I was a Browns fan, not a Bengals fan. So that was cool. But there was a linebacker that played for Notre Dame. And his name was Michael Stonebreaker. So shared first name, kick-ass last name. and number 42.
I mean, oh yeah.
Made perfect. So that's kind of how I got on the Notre Dame bandwagon. Tyrone Willingham tried to end that for me, and probably every other Notre Dame fan. But it just so happened that was about the same time, mid to late 90s, when Penn State really started peaking with Kyle Brady and Kerry Collins, Kajana Carter, that crew. So that filled the gap nicely until I got back to, or Notre Dame got back to something that was watchable.
So you'd say, so Penn State's got a spot in your heart for sure, still though.
Yeah, there's always going to be something there for Penn State. And I did have Penn State for a couple seasons here in the NDL. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was tremendous. I absolutely love that. And I quietly keep an eye on Penn State. I don't much care for James Franklin right now. But yeah, there's always going to be a bit of a soft spot for Penn State.
I got to tell you one thing that surprised me when I took a little time to, you know, doing my research before this. If you had just asked me off cuff, like, oh, yeah, you know, I know Mike's a Notre Dame fan. And if someone had asked me how many seasons has he had Notre Dame in the NDL, I probably would have said, oh, he's been there a couple times or whatnot. So it actually kind of stunned me to realize that this is only your third season there with them. That just...
Well, yeah, so you have to remember that Notre Dame during the time of the original NDL was... Mm-hmm. a place where you could schedule 10 games, right? Or something like that, 9 or 10 games. So it was a super hot commodity just from the scheduling standpoint, because you could do whatever you wanted. Yep. And during the time that I was, you know, most active, there was another user here that actually dynastied them. I think he was probably here 10 to 14 seasons or something like that. So it wasn't like they were just rolling free. And if you take a look at kind of my history, I frequently put myself in position to try to get mid-level teams to play up. That way I could get myself a good draft. So I'm frequently bouncing in between like these really fun teams to play with, but never any super killer teams, because I always wanted to try to put myself in position just in case a Notre Dame were to come open, or, you know, UC, I wanted to mess with them in Penn State, of course.
Mm-hmm. So just to follow up on that, I would imagine that you have no plans whatsoever to leave for as long as you can stay there.
Yeah, I think the key words are as long as I can stay there, right? Like, I will freely admit that I am not a top-tier coach here in the NDL. I think that on my very best day, I might be able to compete with some of them. But that's, you know, the competitive gaming, at least from the football sense, and a lot of PlayStation games have really passed me by. And I'm good enough to get by against many, but not against, you know, everyone, and kind of accept that. So I'm anxiously awaiting what's going to happen with Indy's rating. They were an 88 this year. They had a pretty subpar offense. The offense has improved, at least based on the ratings that I've seen. I'm going to be stuck with a 80 overall quarterback, which is never good.
You have a killer running back for sure in Love, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Killer running back. And actually, I can run the ball in most games with an average running back. So I don't really worry about that too much. And the O-line is getting a monster boost. So I'm a little concerned, right, that they're going to come in at a 92 or a 94. And, you know, it could be one and done or two and done. But I also am not the person that's just going to sit there and use them forever. As you're familiar with from Madden Dynasties, you know, being a Browns fan, I've actually not always used the Browns, and that's okay. So I don't necessarily have to have Notre Dame to be here and be doing what I'm doing. For me, it's have a fun team. I've got to live a full year with them, and if there's another Notre Dame fan out there that wants them, then more power to them. Go get them.
Cool.
I don't know. That sounds like some foreshadowing there. So those of you who are out there in the audience who are listening, who are Notre Dame fans, there might be a chance that you might be able to get them. Maybe. We're not going to.
Definitely a chance. I mean, look, if there's a Notre Dame fan that's sitting on the one seed and they came to me and said, hey, I think I got a great, you know, a great spot, you know, where you stand, and like, if I think they're near the one, I'd probably step aside just to be sure that they got them. Just kind of the way it is. Like, you know, it's big thing about the NDL is having fun and keeping people engaged. And if, you know, getting somebody an opportunity to have their dream school is part of that, that's fine. I've gotten to live my four seasons here. So, you know, and to be five, because I'll be back, you know, for one more year at least. But, you know, be happy to step aside and let somebody have a crack at it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I mean, that's kind of what happened with me when I had the number one pick, and everybody was surprised I didn't take Miami. Part of the reason was because I had another Miami fan ask me if they can get him, and he was in a position to get them, so I let him, you know. Plus, not every day you get a chance to pick out of, you know, whatever top team there is, so, like, why not? Why not just give it a shot? But we all have our fun, and that'd be pretty cool. I mean, it's good to hear that, you know, you are willing to give someone an opportunity who enjoys the school to enjoy them, and that's I really think that's pretty cool. So, Mike, a lot of guys have come to know you as the data guy, okay? So what do you do in your daily life that you have been able to use that knowledge and experience for the NDL?
So I'm a director of FP&A, so I work in finance and analytics, currently working in the specialty home infusion marketplace. And that's, it's pretty interesting. It opened my eyes coming from retail. So 2018 was in retail and kind of looked around. I'm like, man, you know, this business is just a dying business, and I need something that's going to sustain me for the rest of my career. And kind of fell into an opportunity in the pharmacy side of the business in healthcare. And company that I had joined ended up being purchased by Optum. So I was with Optum for a while, and this company kind of came out of nowhere. I wasn't in the market for a job. They came in and said, yo, hey, we'd like to bring you in and help us. We're a rapidly growing business. We've heard good things. And they kind of let me pick a number, and we went with it. So that's kind of what I do on the daily. How that helps in the NDL, I don't know that it helps a ton, right? Like, I think really what works well is the strategy and operations side of my background, which I actually came from my retail experience, where I was a director of door ops, staffing, finance, and systems, and spent a lot of time analyzing how to run the business, how to, you know, doing time studies, functional stuff, working in a lot of different organizational things. So when it comes to the NDL, it's easy to apply a lot of those skills where you're faced with a tough decision, and you have to consider the ramifications of the choice that you're going to make. You know, there's me, who's straightforward me, who's, you know, old Madden League commissioner me, that's like, look, my way or the highway, you don't like it, you can get the hell out. And then the NDL is a different animal, right? It's 130 people, and it's something that we're not here to play a season. When a decision is made, or I give input on a decision, it's how is this going to affect us today, and how does it set a precedent for the long term of the NDL, not just while I'm here, but when I'm in a retirement home, when I, you know, when I hang up my PlayStation controller, what can we do now? What framework can we build so that this thing just runs like a well-oiled machine for the next decade?
That makes a whole lot of sense. Me personally, I'm not hanging up my controller, because by the time we end up in nursing homes, that stuff will be like all VR. So I will be able to mentally, you know, keep up with the younger whippersnappers, you know, because my mind's going to be a little slick there. I'm really just kidding.
But amen. If anything, I'm going to have more time to play in those days.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have more time to play, but man, I can't remember what I had for lunch most days, so I don't know how you're going to be breaking down defenses at 75. I'm going to be like,
the interceptions will happen a lot, and there's a decent chance of possible frequent sanctions because I don't realize I rammed the same play six times in a row.
100%.
I don't know. The AI might be a little bit smarter by then, so we might get a little bit more help than we're getting these days.
I'm just going to have them put them on Heisman and let it play the game for me.
You can use, like, ChatGPT to call plays for me or something, right? Will that work? I don't know.
That might be a thing. You know what? I might actually run use that to create my next offense.
So I look, that is a thing now, and I don't know that it would work in the NDL or if you could get scouting reports from it, but I can tell you, as I've dabbled in some different other gaming areas, that ChatGPT is becoming crazy overpowered in the information that it can provide you in preparing for competitive events.
I would have to agree, because I use ChatGPT when it comes to my Call of Duty gaming, and I'm probably more competitive there than I am in football. So yeah, the stuff that I've gotten there has been pretty next level. So I wouldn't be surprised. Now we're gonna have a whole lot of
love
guys
it.
Jump running the ChatGPT next week.
Well, let's switch gears just slightly here. Let's talk about Ohio a little bit. You know, we approached this last time we were out talking with another person from your state there. As I mentioned there, it's a state that gets dogged sometimes. What are some good things that you love about your state there of Ohio?
I mean, look, cost of living is amazing here, right? So it's crazy, you know, as I've looked at positions around the country, different job offers, and trying to find a house or land or something that is similar. And I'm like, this is nuts. You're paying how much to live where? And, you know, you look at what you have here in Ohio, the cost of living is fantastic. We have, we almost have two pro football teams. I mean, maybe if you combine them, we have one or half of one.
Yeah.
But if you just think about how the state is set up, man, it's, you know, I was in Columbus before I got here, you know, 2 hours ago, dropping my wife off at the airport. The dead center of the state, I was in Columbus. I live between Dayton and Cincinnati in the southwest corner. You got Cleveland to the north, Toledo to the northwest, Akron northeast. Any way you go, you can pretty much get to a decent-sized city in an hour to an hour and a half. In terms of, like, the land and just the way things are set up, most of the major or most of the suburban areas are really along I-70 and I-75. So one of the things that I always say about where I live in particular is that I'm 10 minutes to nothing and I'm 15 minutes to everything. And I can get out, like I can catch a Dayton Dragons game, and they put on a fantastic show. And I think for years they were like rated the best minor league baseball team show that's around. But I've got the Reds, I've got the Bearcats, UD Flyers are literally 10 minutes up Route 4 from where I live. If you're a Buckeyes fan, you know that you got Ohio State. We got a hockey team. We got two soccer teams now. FC Cincinnati puts on a fantastic show down there, and that's a great area. So there's just so much to do, and that's before you get into the cool shit, like the water parks, right? We got water parks up and down 75 and 71. We have at the north end up on Lake Erie, we have Cedar Point. On the south end in Cincinnati, we have Kings Island. So we got two fantastic amusement parks. And then just you want to talk parks, we've got tons of parks where you can just, you know, take your boat, have a great time, you know, out on the lake or on the river that's running into it. So there's crazy amounts of things to do here. And I think it's just completely overlooked because it's not all centrally located in like one hub. It's just this excellent place to live and know your way around.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I like it. So I want to piggyback. I'm gonna jump the order here, elbow cane out for a second. It's a question that is a natural jump off from there. If we end up having an NDL convention, Ohio edition one day, what kind of area, where would you choose? Should we head? Should we go for a more city central area? Should we go more country-ish vibe? Or is this a case of, you know, is there a good spot where we can get the best of both worlds, in your opinion?
You know, I've never done the NDL convention thing in Vegas or the one that they had here in Texas. And kind of looking at how they set it up in Texas, I think that the vibe I kind of got from that was a lot of how my golf trips were that I had been planning for the last 20 years. And it, as we've gotten older, everybody's a little more, you know, stay at the place and chill kind of thing. So when I think of it from that standpoint, like Probably the best case scenario is getting a nice sized place outside of Cincinnati, playing one night at maybe a casino, one night at a Reds ball game down on the banks. You can hang out. You got an open bar right there at the entrance to the Reds stadium. That's pretty awesome. And then, you do it off of a lake or something where you can have a boat rental. So you get a little bit of indoors, outdoors, and game all going on. There's Topgolf down in the area if you want to do that. So yeah, I think something still like that would work. It's not really what you'd call a dream destination, but it's super easy access, right? Two, three, four airports within a drivable range, and right off I-70, 75, and 71. So drivable for a lot of people that are in the area too.
Yeah, I think I did the math. I could myself, I could be in the area between 6 to 7 hours, depending how the behavior of state troopers along the way.
Yeah, 6 hours max. You can fly through Kentucky.
Gotcha.
All right, well, sticking with the Ohio, since we are so fond of this state right now, Mike, I want you to go ahead and rank these famous women from Ohio and elaborate on why you would rank them where you do. Halle Berry, Annie Oakley, Carmen Electra, Kate Holmes, Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah, so I don't know who Beverly D'Angelo is, so she can be
You don't know who
last.
Beverly D'Angelo? That's the
No.
wife from the National Lampoon vacation, Vegas Vacation, and stuff like those movies
Yeah,
with Chevy
no,
Chase.
see, I never watched it, never really paid attention to it. I was watched
Well,
Rocky and
damn.
Karate Kid on repeat, kid, man. And all the shitty Van Damme and Steven Seagal shows. So
Hey,
she's
those were
last.
awesome.
Annie Oakley, like I didn't know she's from Ohio, but she can shoot stuff, so that's like bonus points, I think. What else do we got? We got Carmen Electra. She's a freak. I mean, that is probably bumped her up a few notches there. That's tough. Let's go. Let's go Halle Berry one. Carmen Electra two. I don't know what Annie Oakley looked like. She could shoot a gun, though. That's pretty sweet. Let's go with her three, Katie Holmes four, and the other chick five.
That's fair.
Definitely fair.
Well, we'll stay on the Ohio questions for the moment here. And there's a couple food items from the area that some people I've known really talk a big game for. In fact, I had a coworker my previous job who would stump for both of these items here. And that was Cincinnati chili and Buckeyes, the peanut butter and chocolate candies. Not the school full of sociopaths up there in Columbus. Are these overrated, properly rated, and what do you think about them?
So here's what I'm gonna say. They are they're overrated if you're outside of Ohio and you gotta listen to everything about them, and that's much like, the other Buckeyes as well. But I would tell you, if done properly, they're actually underrated within Ohio. So it's a little bit of both. And the thing is, a Buckeye, look, it's all about what you like. And if you like a big fat Reese cup, hey, you're probably gonna like a Buckeye, right? The peanut butter to chocolate ratio is pretty huge. So if you like the peanut butter fudge, it's right up your alley. And as far as Cincinnati chili goes, that is a weird one, and it is unexplainable to people that don't grow up on it. Most people that come in the first time they have it, they're like, oh my God, that's horrible, and probably gives them the craps and whatever else. But if you're here, you absolutely know the difference between what Cincinnati chili tastes like, and that is actually a brand, not just a type, what Gold Star tastes like and what Skyline tastes like. And you have like you pick a side, right? This is Ford, Chevy, and Dodge here. So, and people will fight to the death over it. Me personally, I'm in the Skyline camp. I think it is the best overall. But yeah, it is something that outside of the state, if you're coming in, you got to have it a few times before you can really judge it, and you got to try it a couple of different ways. So you can't just have it, you know, on the noodles. You can't just have it on the dogs. You gotta try a couple of different options.
So elaborate on Skyline. What makes Skyline Chili Skyline Chili?
So the number one distinguishing factor between it isn't actually the chili; it's the cheese. It's a thin shredded, mild cheddar, and the you know, basically, let's say you have a standard size bowl in front of you. You're going to have maybe 4 ounces of chili in there. You're going to have a handful of spaghetti noodles. And then you're going to have so much cheese that it sits 4 inches over the bowl. And then they give you some oyster, you know, crackers with it, the little hexagon crackers or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. You put some hot sauce on them. You get some crackers with the cheese. It's tremendous.
Do you have a hot sauce recommendation to go with said chili?
No, anything works. You know, whatever your favorite is. I'm not a crazy hot sauce guy like our man Pino is. You know, for me, it's you could probably put 6 of them on a teaspoon, and I couldn't tell you the difference between the brands if they're all within a relative heat level. So yeah, whatever works. Something, you know, Tabasco, Texas Pete, whatever your thing is.
That just all made me really hungry. Damn it. Mike, before we get to the next question, I actually want to take a moment here. One of the things I put in there for you was I wanted to go ahead and give you a good shout out because ever since I returned to online gaming, you have played a very important role in any success that I've had because I've been able to bounce ideas off of you and concepts and get real great feedback. And you've also done that for a lot of others as well. So I did want to take the time out and thank you for helping me as well as helping others in the league. But going with that, do you have any NDO rivals? And if so, who are they and why?
You know, man, so I, you know, first of all, thanks. You know, I enjoy, you know, hanging with you, running scrims, whatever. And there have been some other guys that have reached out and said, hey, can you look at this or can you look at that? And I try to fit it in the schedule because, you know, it goes back to that whole NDL thing about engagement, immersion. I want people to have fun, play their best. It doesn't matter if it's football, golf, racing, whatever. I'm happy to try to help. And normally I'll spill the beans on quite a few secrets or things that I think are important and kind of an open book about it, man. It's more fun that way, right? If everybody's competitive, we can all have a blast. But as far as rivals go, you know, for me, rivalries have to be balanced. They got to be competitive, got to be back and forth, and they got to be consistent. And I don't have that really with anybody. Because I've bounced around a lot, and I've never really, I guess, never really wanted to have a consistent rival or cared about it. You know, Kane, for instance, you know, I think we played 4 times in the NDL now. You beat me all 4 times. So even though I may have an advantage outside of the NDL in our games, or, you know, we're back and forth and even in scrimmages, you know, over the course of a year. When it comes to being in the NDL, that's not a rivalry to me because I'm not close. So if I can't compete and I'm 0-4, there's really not a rivalry there. And there's not the long-term consistent playing. So, you know, who knows? Maybe someone comes along. Maybe there's some engagement. And if there isn't, I'm not worried about it because I'm not really looking at it that way. I think I've said this before, going all the way back to my first stint in the NDL, right? Playing the NDL season for me is not about getting to the CFP. It's not about winning the championship. Playing the NDL season is the cost of being in the NDL to me and all the other things that the NDL has to offer. So, you know, if a rivalry comes along, cool. If it doesn't, that's also cool.
You know what? That is an awesome perspective. I hadn't even looked at it that way. So, yeah, you've given me a different way to look at things there. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. I find it interesting looking at the history, too, to realize, you know, we've played plenty of times in Madden or online dynasties over the years, realized we've never actually faced off in an NDL game, which I found interesting.
Yeah, it's nuts, right? You would think it would have happened. It happened.
Yeah. Anyway, jumping on to another NCAA-related question, possibly an NCAA-related. If you're making a Mount Rushmore of sports video games, what are you selecting?
So Mount Rushmore, that's the all-time great, that's influential in the time period that they're in. Like, that's kind of how I look at it. And I think I would hope that if we polled 100 and some people here in the NDL, everybody, or at least the majority, has Tecmo Bowl or Tecmo Super Bowl on their list. Like, that's got to be one of the four for any of us older guys that have played football games. So that Absolutely. One's got to be up there. And NCAA is up there. So that's two. If we're sticking strictly console, then I'm going to put Gran Turismo up there. I'm a huge Gran Turismo fan.
Good choice.
That leaves the third one. Third one on the PlayStation. So, you know, a lot of the new games are fun to play, but I don't think they're legendary. And I don't want to throw it all the way back to Excite Bike. So I'm going to go with a game, and this one's going to be off the radar, and it's probably not on anybody else's Mount Rushmore. But this is a game that I spent a lot of time playing just because it was fun and entertaining to me. And that is the Road Rash series the 90s. Man, I used to beat Sven's ass on that game. It was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I played that game. I had a friend, one of the versions of it, he had it on one of the Segas. We would waste many an afternoon going nuts on that game. Definitely scratched that itch of speed, plus a healthy dose of violence as well.
Perfect combination, right? Whether it's the chain or the, what was it, the pipe, or you just took the bike out from under them.
Absolutely.
Back in with the pipe.
Now, I got a question. Do you guys consider fighting games a sports game?
Absolutely.
Okay, then Tekken would have to be up there for me then. Yeah. Tekken and NASCAR. Those two would have to be up there for me.
Yeah, you could get into that. And I will say one other really cool gaming experience I had. This is probably around 2000. So it was before NDL. You know, douchey Mike days. You know, we had a, you know, white car and Banner and all that stuff. It was actually in a wrestling league, and it was on Nintendo. Wasn't Nintendo 64, maybe Super Nintendo or whatever. But it was it was crazy. Like, we created our own characters, and then we went over, and I forget the method, but we had to, maybe it was like a memory card or something, we had to take our characters to somebody's house and load them up and wrestle there, like, in person. So there's like eight people there, like, having this wrestling event. It was kind of crazy. We did that for, like, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, 6 months.
That was definitely,
that's really cool.
Definitely memory card days. All right, so Mike, we actually had the opportunity to speak with Nidler on our last show, and when we spoke with him, he had told us about your involvement in OTTP. How did you get involved in that, and how did that help keep the NDL alive?
Accidental involvement, I guess. So probably, honestly, it's really no different, I think, than how I ended up on the admin team here. In the NDL for this version of the game. I had, the NDL was on the downside, college football was going away, and I was pretty big into a thing called What If Sports, which I recently got back in with James the Carman. He posted about it. I'm like, dang, yeah, I used to do that. We had a lot of fun at it. It's a sim strategy kind of game, right? All numbers based and whatnot. So it was really cool. And then I saw OTP and what these guys were doing, and it was like the thread was super active and, like, you know, cool, what is this thing? And like, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh yeah, I like this. This is sweet. Like, numbers simulator. This is right up my alley. I can have some fun with it. And I got in. I couldn't tell you what season it was. I believe it might have been their second run at it, or maybe it was their first run and it was like paused, but it started in like game year 2015, 2016, and I think I came in 2018, 2019. And I'm not going to go into the detailed history of OOTP other than to say that leadership was inconsistent, things were not running well, and I had a way to actually take over and run it and make things a lot more organized and consistent. From my office, I could remote access my computers at home and run the simulations at a consistent time. I could add some structure to it. I spent a lot of time trying to understand how the game worked, how finances in the game worked, so that they could have a stable financial system and consistency. So I just, they put a lot of effort into it, and I think I gave them a really good foundation. And as with a lot of things, I burned myself out on it, right? I invested a lot, and kind of it was time to move on. But having OOTP became an outlet for, 20 to 30 guys to consistently be on the old forums, to stay in touch, to have a connection every single day. And, not with the speed that you have in Discord, where the topics get, they get so out of control so fast. But, we were able to keep up with each other, not just within the game, but just, current events like sports debates, political debates, for better or for worse, during the hotbed of the 2016 elections and then in the 2020. Arguing about how good Dwayne Wade actually was, or whatever else we might have been doing in the sports thread. But it was a way to keep the bond there. And I think a lot of that bond is the reason why the NDL was able to come back so strong. That and Homie, and everybody sings his praises, and it will never be enough to stay on a show or over time. But if you guys had any idea what that guy does for this league, it's unbelievable. He's tremendous.
Absolutely. I think we definitely got to, whenever the conversations are had about why this league exists today, we definitely got to say that everything that's happened with OTTP definitely helped keep the ground fertile to allow this to even be an option, and for Homie and those people to step up and do what they've done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and it's, it's great to see that we were able to stick together, and now the family is growing again, and it's cool to see. I don't know how much you guys do away from the NDL, but like in other things, seeing these new guys are really now veterans, right? They've been here three seasons, four seasons. They're involved in this that's away from the NDL, that's something else, and they're just bam, they're just right in there with the vets, like they've been there all along. So it's really cool.
Yeah, we've had some really great additions for sure. Well, let's take a hard left turn from a reminiscent responsible question to back to an Ohio-based query. And we're going to go with the traditional marry, fuck, kill question, Ohio. And we're going to pick LeBron James, Jake and Logan Paul, they count as one, and another famous Ohioan, maybe the most famous of all, Steven Spielberg.
I just hear like Puff Daddy on this question all day.
Did we lose him? Did he disconnect?
No, I was over here just sitting here thinking like, why couldn't we have female?
Because this makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, this was not me. I didn't do it to you.
Holy cow. Who's worth more, Spielberg or LeBron James?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Are we talking about monetary, or are we talking about historical value?
Monetary, right? Because whoever I marry is going to be whoever's worth more, right? Because I'm going to assume no prenup here. So I think that's where you got to start the conversation.
Let's see. Steven Spielberg's net worth is over $5 billion.
We're gonna marry him.
I was about to say, plus he gets residual income from all the royalties. Right. Come on now.
Yeah, LeBron's just north of $1 billion, so Spielberg by a mile. Yeah.
He's lightweight. Kill. That's a tough one.
No, it's not.
LeBron's kinda old. You know, I think I'm gonna kill LeBron and keep the other two around for entertainment value.
Oh, God. A couple of jesters, I guess. Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, they are clowns. But anyways.
Yes. Thank you for being a good sport.
That was something.
Man, that threw me for a loop. All right. So some of us notice about you personally that you are very involved in the lives of your children. Constantly traveling for games. What are all the sports that your kids are in, and which ones do you enjoy being a part of more so than others?
Holy cow, man. Let me go current. Let me just stay fairly current, right? So swim, both compete in swim here locally. This is our this is what I call the off season sport. So they're on a competitive team, but everything for us is optional because it's vacation time, it's birthday time, and it's our downtime for soccer seasons. Both play basketball. We've tried to juggle the AAU route and competitive club soccer route. It's super complicated and a lot, and bless a couple other members here who've been able to pull that off, but man, it's really tough with two of them. Swim, basketball, tumbling. One daughter does tumbling, the other wants nothing to do with it anymore, thank God. Piano lessons, they're not a sport, but both do piano, have done piano. Soccer, I mentioned, and soccer, once you kind of reach the stage and the levels that we're at, it is a year-round activity that also includes futsal leagues and significant travel. So basically the way the soccer season works is you have your tryouts in May, sign your year contract in June, immediately jump into futsal in July, it runs into August, then your soccer season runs August into October here in Ohio, maybe touches November, and then it's right into futsal again and indoor season. So sometimes it's just futsal with off-season skills training, sometimes it's futsal and indoor, and then spring season kicks up in February with soccer again. And then so because we didn't do AAU basketball this spring, my oldest, who was a seventh grader, wanted to try track for the first time, and she absolutely fell in love with it, did a fantastic job. So going forward, and as part of our year contract that we just signed with this soccer club, had a specific discussion so that the director is aware, hey, spring is track season, she is going to run track. It is something she loves to do. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at now. A lot of that foundation was really laid because both girls competed in USJO gymnastics up until level 4 here in Ohio. But that thankful for everything it taught them, but so happy we're done with that. And then I guess finally the last piece was, what do I enjoy the most? Swim meets are awful, so we'll just say that is the least, hands down. It's 90 degrees in heat, it is slow, events go super fast as far as how long they're in the pool. I could never go to another swim meet and be happy again. But everything else, really, really enjoy it. I coached soccer for many seasons. I think I have over 40 seasons under my belt, between both girls, fall, spring, both, but I no longer coach them. They are with fantastic organizations, different organizations actually, and with tremendous coaches. So I'm all for it, man. Anything they want to get into, they pretty much say, hey, yo, dad, I want to do this. And if they're serious, I'll support it. I'll make it happen one way or the other.
That is awesome.
That's pretty awesome. Jumping onto part that part of your life that is, I mean, that's a lot, but I mean, that's awesome to see how much you invest and pour into your kids there. But as a girl dad, eventually, I don't know if you've had to deal with this yet, but there will be prospective suitors. How have you handled any you run into this point as far as, you know, putting the fear of God into them? And if you haven't handled it yet, how will you do so? You know, some of the go-to options that I've experienced or used myself, not all of these, are unearthly firm handshakes that may or may not make bones crunch or squeak, cleaning of a gun, or possibly, you know, hunting knife collection in front of, you know, prospective suitors. What is your method?
Oh, that's a fun one. And I think, you know, while all those are pretty valid, I think I have an advantage that a lot of dads may not have, in that we live in the same town that I grew up in. And not only, you know, are we heavily invested in sports for the girls individually, I also spend a lot of time working within the community. And part of those, you know, 40 seasons of coaching soccer and the time that we spent in t-ball and softball, and I coach basketball still. So out of all the kids that are within 1 year younger and one year younger than my youngest daughter and 1 year older than my oldest daughter, so a span of maybe, I don't know, 6 years, I guess, in total, 5 years in total, I've coached more than 50% kids in the community in one way or the other. And combine that with the fact that living in a small community like I do, I know all of their parents. So I've known these kids since they were just out of diapers. So basically, they walk around, I look straight at them, they get the look, they know what's up, and they know what would happen if not. So
you can say, not only do I know where you live, I know what hospital you were born in, I know your blood type, and I know what you're allergic to if it comes down to it.
Pretty much, you got it. And look, the benefit of being in a small town is the small town values, right? So for the most part, all the dads are on the same page. So we don't really have to worry too much here.
Love it.
That'd be awesome. See, that's the downside I have to living in major cities my whole entire life. Can't get around it. Well, you know, we had asked you about the rivals, and I loved the concept that you explained for that. But with not having rivals, would you say that you might have a, you know, top five list of coaches that you enjoy playing? And if so, what coaches would make that list?
Man, that's I don't know that I could spit out five that I would say are top. I think it goes, that's tricky. That's a great question, honestly. When we're in scrimmage mode playing each other, that's near the top of the list for me, because we're really, you know, we're on the mic, we're having fun, we're, you know, trying to figure things out and, you know, enjoying it and relaxing. And I think that's kind of the most important piece is, you know, at the end of the day, this is a game and it's meant to be fun, not a grind. And sometimes it gets to be too much of a grind. So that's near the top for me. When I think about test matches, I put Chris, that dude, at the top of the list.
Definitely.
Having played him in Madden for so long, he knows what I'm thinking and what I'm going to do. And likewise, I've got a really good read on him. So we've had some epic games, especially in CFB. So he's up there. I will also, and you know, not just kissing up to the host here, but when Penguin is focused, thoroughly enjoy playing him.
Yeah.
When he's had a 15-hour day, it shows, right? It shows on the field. But when he's locked in, it's a blast. And it's right there with playing that dude as well. And you know, I absolutely enjoy that. So those three off the top for sure. And then beyond that, for me, it's it's more about style than anything else. Like, if, you know, it's really quick and easy to see if somebody's there to be win at all costs, or if they're trying to outthink you in some way, right? Mm-hmm. You hurry up, rush the line of scrimmage. You're out there in 10 personnel running four wide, four verts, and then taking off with a quarterback with no time. And then the next play, you come up, hit me with a halfback direct, and you follow that with a, you know, a rocket toss to the left out of flex bone, and you haven't run a single flex bone play. Man, that's garbage. Come on. Like, nobody enjoys that. Are you that hard up to win a video game that you do some goofy stuff like that? That's so weird to me. For me, then, it's like, show me people that they got a scheme and they're trying to do something, and it's not based on being cheesy and lame. You know, they're setting me up. Like, there's nothing that's more fun to me than when I've been trying to watch somebody's tendencies. I think I got them nailed. I'm using the linebacker. They hit me with a play action pass that they've set up because they've, you know, run a couple series of run plays that made me bite on it. And I'm like, damn, got me.
Yep.
That is probably one of the better feelings when you're playing somebody. It's like, yep, you got me on that one. And it wasn't lame. It wasn't a 99 speed receiver up the seam. It wasn't, you know, a jet sweep. It was a genuine great play call.
It's a great answer. And I felt my blood pressure actually increase when you said the word rocket toss. Oh, oof, God. I feel you there so much.
Right, man. Like, look, they're just it's money plays. I get it. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to have something in their pocket, and they're probably going to pull it on a crucial third down. And I can kind of live with that. Like, that's fine. But when it is literally relentless, nonstop, this is the killer for me, right? Like, look, I don't want to cuss. I'll just set my control down. If I roll out and, like, I've run six plays, and I've seen cover three match, cover three cloud, cover three this, cover three, like, get the hell out of here. Like, good. I get it. It's good. It's safe. It's smart. It's also boring, and nobody wants to play against that.
Yeah. It gives us, we got enough options, enough different plays in there. There's no reason to not be mixing in at least some cover six, nine, two, a little bit of variations of man. Absolutely. And I mean, those money plays have their place, but freaking set them up. Don't just call one exactly. After another.
That's it. Look. I love jet tosses as much as anybody else. They're fun, and to me, it's kind of, that's college football, right? There's, you know, and even mm-hmm. Sean McVay did a lot of it with the Rams, like the jet motion and all that. If you play against me, it's pretty rare, and yeah, I'm going to give it away, season four, whatever, going into next year. The first time my guy goes in motion, it's about a 99% chance he's not getting the ball. Okay, just stay home. You don't mm-hmm. need to run your end over there, switch and get on the nickel corner, whatever. Like, I'm probably going to run the ball, and I'm probably going to run it to the opposite side of where the jet motion is going. Why? Because it's setting up the play. Yeah, it's lame. Yes, I'm going through the motions, but Jesus, man, at least I'm trying to play a simulated game.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, speaking of the game, and we talked about, you know, you being such a numbers and an analytical type of guy. If you were CEO of EA for a day, what would you focus on influencing in the new game regarding features, gameplay, or whatever part of it stands out to you?
Oh, man. This comes down to personal opinion, and you and I have had numerous conversations about this, I think, privately, and even kind of out in the open a lot. Like, you know that I despise unnecessary randomness for the sake of randomness. And EA implements things that add random elements to the game that often are not positive effects. They are negative impact elements, right? What is home field advantage? Ask yourself that question. What advantage, what positive are you giving somebody with home field advantage? You're not. It is a negative element that's meant to make things harder for one person than another. that is not fun. That is stupid. And I get it, it's in the game, but it's not fun. Injuries are not fun. Putting in wear and tear and absolutely overcooking it is not fun. Wear and tear, same thing. How is that a positive element for somebody that's going to play the game? I would rather see an overpowered X factor, and God forbid I say that word because it was horrible in Madden, but I would rather see that than see negative impact effects constantly in games. Like, it's just tiring. So I would, if I didn't eliminate them, I would have it in a way to quickly turn them off so that you can get into a game. It can be in a more, I don't know, skill-based environment. So the game used to have three different types of play, right? It had competitive, it had arcade, and it had sim. And in competitive, a lot of that extra nonsense was shut off. And for me, when you're still trying to play competitively, that's the way I would like to play my game. So that, for me, it would be taking a bunch of the nonsense out of the game. Really, what it comes down to is just test your shit, man. Like, how many times do we got to play?
What an idea, yeah.
Beta, right? Like,
that's true.
And be honest, right? Like, that's it. Truth and test your stuff. Like, it's crazy that we're 6 months in with same problems, or, you know, like we had where Dynasties completely reset. Like, that's absolutely wild.
Oh, was that Madden a couple of years ago where we lost everything in December? Because they just told us, oh, yeah, sorry, all the saved files are gone in the franchises.
Exactly. Crazy stuff.
Yeah. I almost just stopped playing at that point.
I don't understand. Like, how does a game get through into production, through QA into production, when you die in season 3? And who's out there testing the dynasties, right? And look, I'm going to be a stickler again here. When you look at the stats that are generated in a game, they're not remotely realistic. The number of plays that we're running are not sim. The number of yards per attempt are not sim. They're not, or if they sim, they're not in line with what happens in the real world. And
absolutely,
if you want to put out a game, that should be your baseline. Your baseline shouldn't be catering to the what the hell are we on, muck quarters now? Are they 3 minutes or something stupid where you can just through the clock have the ball the entire half? Like, what is that nonsense? Like, have a mode to deal with your competitive gaming people and the short attention span of the people that are out there today, then, you know, the gamers that are out there today. But if you want to have a true sim, like, come on, like, let's balance it. Let's make it realistic.
I hear you.
Yeah, I definitely could not agree more. Being that we're speaking about the gaming world and sports, if you could go to any sporting event or game in the world, what would you choose?
Man, great question. Any sporting event in the world or a game. I think this has changed so much over the years. I really wanted to go to the national championship last year with Notre Dame, but one of those things that's super expensive, and I think the cost to go to sporting events is so out of control. Couldn't pull the trigger on it. I think that would be the best environment, is a college football national championship. I still think there's some purity to college football and the love of the game there, the fans. Other things that would cross my mind right away, you know, WrestleMania, but only if I'm literally sitting ringside, because how could you even watch WrestleMania if you're sitting in the upper deck at the, you know, the Dairy's World? Like, that's not a thing. Then maybe if I could say that I could have any seat that I want at any event.
Sure.
Yeah, then I might stay sitting on a yacht backed into Monaco watching F1 in Monaco. That would be pretty badass.
Yeah, I've heard those races are pretty cool.
Well, Monaco's not, because it's just follow the leader, because the track is so tight. But Yeah, there are some tracks that are absolutely fantastic, and then there's some that are complete bums. I'm actually considering going up to Mid-Ohio here next weekend to see Indy come through and race at Mid-Ohio. Unfortunately, the area that they have stands available for, you've only got like two sections where you can see the main straightaway heading into turn six and then look back across to the finish line up the main channel. Otherwise, you're only blocked and you're only able to see about 20% of the track. But definitely, you know, racing Bristol. If you ever get a chance to go to Bristol, being in Tennessee, I think you got to put a Bristol night race on the bucket list.
I've heard people say that, and that stuff's cool. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things I just don't understand so much, but maybe someday worth giving it a try.
What? No, it's awesome. Been to Bristol, been to Richmond, been to Daytona, and I can't remember because I was young, but it's whatever track that's here in another track here in Virginia. I think it's Martinsville. I think that's it. I know it starts with
Martinsville.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've seen the short track stuff. So, yeah, yeah. So what do you think? You get to really contrast there.
Yeah.
Daytona versus Bristol or Martinsville. What do you think is more fun? I personally would want to see Bristol.
Yes.
I don't care. Like, super speedway is cool, doing 200 mile an hour nonstop, never lifting, right? Just full send it. But to me, Bristol is raw. Like, you're on a tight track, high crazy banks, and it's bumper to bumper.
Yeah. I have to agree. Like, it's a more intense race, and it's way more fun to watch because there's a lot more going on. And just the slightest turn, slightest inch, like, it could change the whole thing. So, yeah, definitely Bristol. Martinsville would probably be my second. I mean, I love the short tracks just because there's so much that happens on those. And I'm trying to think, there was a track that I really wanted to go to because they're the right turn tracks. I can't remember it right now. It's going to come back to me later though.
Right turn. So you're talking like Watkins Glen?
Yeah. Glen.
Yeah. So I know Watkins Glen like the back of my hand. I can almost race that in a GT3 or GT4 car with my eyes closed. To tell you every corner, every entrance, every exit speed, what gear to be in based on the car. It's part of my downtime was messing around in GT7. And then I actually had a racing sim here at the house. And recently, I had sold that one in October, and I recently just built a new one, to dabble in iRacing. So for the past 2 weeks, I've been messing around with iRacing, and I can tell you firsthand, running 40 laps on a mile or less track versus running 25 to 40 laps on Daytona. Daytona is easy. Like, yeah. Look, if you can bump draft, if you can keep your stuff in the line and you keep your hands soft on the wheel so that you can feel the track pulling the car where it needs to go versus elbow to elbow, like getting after it. Yeah, man, short track's crazy. Love that stuff.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of the name. That's definitely a track that I want to go to, Watkins Glen. Chris?
Well, I think doesn't that kind of bring us about to our end of our questions here? Do we want to?
No, yeah, I was going to let you ask the last one here today.
Okay, gotcha. Well, lastly, what's become customary in these interviews here, Mike, is for parting words, especially with you as being an OG, even though you haven't been here every season, you're as veteran gets here, your experience. What words of wisdom would you like to share for newer coaches, be it people that are new to the league now or, you know, to join us near in the future? Because we know we'll definitely see some new faces in this next season. And specifically regarding just navigating and being a successful part of the NDL and the NDL experience.
Yeah, I think the best advice that I can give to the new guys coming in is stop worrying about winning. Stop focusing on how good you are, how good you want to be. Quite frankly, man, nobody cares. Really, we don't. The goal here is less about winning championships, you know, going to the college football playoff or whatever. It's more about all the other things that the NDL has to offer, right? Like, be humble, get in there, hang out, kick it with the guys, you know, and communicate. And God, I cannot say the word communicate enough. Like, whether it is in your scheduling thread, communicate, be clear, pick a time, whether it's conflict resolution during a game, like, talk to the other person, treat them like a human. There's a human on the other side of the screen. It isn't like you're in a mutt lobby and your only goal is to win and you don't care what you have to do to get that W. Like, that's not who we are, and that's not what it's about, right? It's about, you know, knowing that Chris's wife has got a bookstore and, you know, they're working on building a house and location out in Tennessee. Like, that's the cool stuff, man. There's like real people out here, and get involved away from the NDL, right? There's tons of guys out there that they run dynasties or they play other games together. Like, the NDL is a community. It's not just college football. College football is why we're here. As I said earlier, to me, it's the cost of admission to get in. If I'm good at it, great. If I'm not, yeah, no problem. Like, not no sweat off my back. I ain't gonna go beat my dog when it's over with. I'm not gonna yell at my kids. Like, that's not the end of the world. I'm probably gonna go pick up PGA, or I'm gonna go sit down and race with them, or, you know, going to play OTP or what if sports, whatever it is, I'm going to be involved somewhere else and spend my time there. So just, there's humans out here. Like, why can't we all just get along kind of thing, but just, you know, be humble, talk, have some fun, and like, start building real relationships, not just competitive gaming relationships.
That is definitely words of wisdom. And I mean, I know a lot of us who have been around for a while, that is exactly what's kept us here. I mean, yeah, we enjoy the college side of things, but being able to really get to know the guys, having guys that you're on an actual first name basis with, and guys you're looking forward to meeting, like if you're going to be in the area, you want to stop by and have some dinner with, or whatever the case may be, that's truly what the NDL is about, and that is a good message to send to the newer guys here. Well, guys, like Chris said, that was the final question. We are going to wrap up another edition of Inside the NDL. It has been wonderful sitting here with Rain. Thank you for coming and joining us today and taking time out of your schedule. And as always, Chris Penguin, I enjoy hosting the show with you. It's been fun. Guys?
Glad to help, sir.
Yeah, you guys enjoy the rest of your evening. And guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you guys next time.